Good morning. You are hopefully watching Deprogram with Ted Rall and Jamarl Thomas. We had a few technical difficulties this morning launching the stream. Robbie is sitting in for the tardy Jamarl, not retarded, but the tardy Jamarl Thomas. He is still wrapping up his own solo show. Let's just make sure that we have YouTube up and running. I'll check on that.
Yeah, I will
And
check on it right
you'll
now.
check on Rumble. All right, so here we go.
Rumble is working. I'm checking the YouTubes right now. Good morning, everybody. Welcome. Glad to have y'all here.
Okay, YouTube is looking good too. Okay, cool. All right, everyone, thanks so much for joining us. As soon as JT pipes in, which should be any second, we will of course bring him in. Okay, so here's the story that today. A lot going on over the weekend, obviously in the Middle East, and we will bring you up to date on that. 10 o'clock TMI show with Manila and I. 12 noon Q&A show here with JT and Robbie and myself. We're going to be taking your calls. That's your phone calls if you're on Rumble, but also your texts if you're on YouTube and on Rumble, and you don't feel like listening, having us hear your beautiful voice on the air. But we look forward to that. We tried this once before and it worked pretty well, so I'm pretty optimistic about that.
I think it's worked great.
Yeah, for sure. So, all right. So today's main news events. Well, I'll sort of go in reverse order. There's a major heat wave scorching Europe right now. Temperature well over the 100 degrees Fahrenheit in places like France, Belgium, Germany, and so on. That's unusual if you don't know Europe. It's rarely that hot, especially this early in the summer. There's JT. Also, we're going to be talking about Keir Starmer's resignation as British Prime Minister. And last and definitely not least, the Lake Lucerne Summit appears by the account of the Pakistanis and the Qataris who hosted it in Geneva, Switzerland, to have made quite a lot of progress. And obviously, all eyes now turn to, besides the Strait of Hormuz, also they turn to Lebanon to see what happens there between Israel, between the IDF and Hezbollah. All right. So, good morning, JT. How are you? JT,
What's
how are
going on, man? Doing
you?
okay today?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Something is like handle business or
Oh, do you might have like
is
another
it
window open
mind
because you
giving?
might be getting the echo, the dreaded echo of two screens. And my cat is meowing outside my door. All right.
But I'm hearing a
An echo? It's
Yeah, try logging out and then just come back in,
Oh,
JT.
I see. There, yeah. There we are.
You might have an extra screen open that's
You still
giving
hear
you
me?
an
Yep, we hear
echo.
Okay. Let me back. Oh, I see. That's what it is. That's what it is. Okay, how about now?
Okay, you sound good. You have sounded good.
It should be better now.
Okay, cool. All right.
Much better. Okay.
Okay, cool. All
There
right.
we
Good
go.
morning, JT. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, man. I can't complain. Yeah, I can't complain. No issues.
Okay. All right. So,
No issues at all.
all right. So let's talk. We should probably get right into it. If you have questions, comments, whatever, please go ahead and post them. Please like, follow, and share the show. If you're watching live on Rumble or YouTube, please post those up. The paid Rumble rants and YouTube super chats are especially appreciated. Just a reminder, the show is always hanging on precariously. Hopefully that'll change. We're moving in the right direction, but we had a show meeting on Friday, Juneteenth, and to try to figure out some things, and I'm feeling pretty good about those. So a lot of it's like algorithm bullshit, like looking under the hood and stuff that has nothing to do with whether the show's any good or not. And it's like the weirdness of like how YouTube is, assessing, like if someone comes in, they listen to the show for a few minutes and then they leave, like how does that count and stuff. So, it's
A few
all there.
minutes is good, a few seconds is bad. That's really what you want to do. If you want to click, yes, this is like 2 seconds. Don't click. Just stay away. You like the plague.
Just you shouldn't tell them that. All the mean people, all the haters are gonna pick up on that.
Yeah, whatever. But if you come to Rumble, though, you don't have those problems. Just say. Plus, with the call-in show, you got to be on Rumble anyway. You can't call in. There he is. There's Clovis.
That's Kat. Yeah. By the way, Kat Cam is on order. So don't say that we do not follow your requests. Okay. So tomorrow, let's talk about what I assume we should talk about Israel first. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
I'm fascinated. My fascination with this is through the moon. There's been a lot of posturing coming out of Trump and coming out of the UN, out of Iran on this point. In one sense, Trump has been putting out tweets that, you know, I'm going to bomb them again. Get your proxies in line or else I'm going to attack the country. Now, mind you, all of these things are breaches of the Memorandum of Understanding. In fact, they're breaches of the first tenet of the Memorandum of Understanding, which is, of course, get your dog in order. And Lebanon is mentioned multiple times throughout the document. And yet, Lebanon is being occupied. Lebanon is being attacked and invaded. I just want to nail that down. On the other side of it, Iran is like, this is outrageous. This is, you know, we're protesting this. We don't like this. We're stopping negotiations. That is what was being reported. The reality of it is those negotiations went on for another 18 hours. So we are now in a conversation about civilian leadership versus the supreme leader. Because obviously the supreme leader put out a comment where he, let's say, threw cold water on what the leadership in regards to Iran was doing, but he was letting it rot. Basically, I don't like this, but I'm going to let this rot. This is on the government, if the government is going to go through with this, which means there's a clear split and division between what the supreme leader and the IRGC thinks versus what the civilian leadership thinks. And I would like to point out, the civilian leadership got it wrong all the way through. They've been wrong all the way through this. And so it gives me pause, I put it that way, that the Memorandum of Understanding is being remorselessly violated, with the U.S. seemingly saying, hey, if you want, we'll open up the strait. We'll let your petrochemicals go through. You can sell your oil. We'll get rid of the sanctions. But Lebanon is going to take a hit. And how committed are you to the memorandum, to every tenet of the memorandum, where you would give up some of your own money, meaning the money that we're giving them back? We're going to give you that. We're going to give you the oil sanction relief. We're going to give you all of that. But Lebanon is going to take it in the ass, and it's going to continue to do so. How committed are you to the memorandum? This is fascinating to me, because I think the IRGC wouldn't throw the Lebanese overboard. I do think, unfortunately, that the reformists will. I don't know. We'll see how this plays out. But obviously, the memorandums are being violated as we speak. Now, on the other side of that, though, it seems like the Strait of Hormuz is closed. So we'll see. I mean, this has to play out. If they've closed the Strait of Hormuz, then that means they're serious about the tenets of the Memorandum of Understanding. If the Strait of Hormuz is open, different conversation.
I'm still on team namby-pamby optimist. I think the Iranians, they won, they know they won, and they're feeling good about it. They're not pressing the point, but they forced the U.S. to agree to force Israel to stop attacking Lebanon and to withdraw, right? That's all in the terms of the agreement. So, obviously, the IDF, the Israelis don't want to do that, as you're very clear about. And the Israelis, more than that, they want to scuttle the whole deal. Yes. So the question is, really, I don't think the question is an Iran question. Is Iran, you know, determined to enforce that provision? I think 100% they're determined to enforce it. So, I mean, and we saw that over the weekend on late Friday when the IGRC, the IRGC announced that they were reclosing the Strait of Hormuz. You know, this is like right at the time and also they delayed sending their emissaries to Geneva by a full day, even while the Americans were already on their way. So in other words, they were like, oh, you're fucking around, and now you're going to find out. The whole deal that you care about and you've been promoting is on the hook. So at that point, Trump got on the phone with Netanyahu and told him to cut the shit. And Netanyahu did somewhat cut the shit. He ordered the IDF to stand down and only engage in quote-unquote defensive operations, never mind that you shouldn't be having anything to defend because you shouldn't be there in the first place because it's not your country, okay? But the point is, in other words, they can defend their current positions from a Hezbollah attack, which is really a Hezbollah defense. But the point is that, like, they have stepped back their posture, okay, in response to Trump. So I think this is not an Iran question. This is a Trump question. Does Trump enforce the memorandum of understanding by basically holding Israel accountable? He can only, if he wants to keep this deal, and I think he desperately wants to, he's going to go to, he's going to go to the Israelis and say, look, you have to withdraw. And if they don't, then he's got to be able to go to the Iranians with something that looks like a breach. He's got to be able to say, listen, it's not me. I can't force them. I'm cutting them off. Fuck them. I'm done with them. It's a new day. Like Vance said, we're turning over a new leaf. But he's got to have, it's got to be nothing less than that for the Iranians to view it as credible. If it's sort of like, you know, like the bad parent in the restaurant lamely asking their kid, hey, little Bobby, don't do that. The Iranians are not going to, they're smart. They know that we control Israel. So, yeah. So, you know, this is about putting our dog to heel. I don't know I think Trump is likelier than not 51-49 to do that. I think he is, but I don't think it's like by any means a certainty. Also, I'm really fascinated by the J.D. Vance aspect of all this. I mean, J.D. Vance is, you know, MAGA never fell in love with him, right? And he was never a neocon, and he's been the skeptic again in this whole thing.
Yeah,
this whole operation is the beginning of his 2028 presidential campaign. If he pulls this off, if he's able to go to, bring peace between the U.S. and Iran and cause Israel to be cut loose, he, first of all, wins the MAGA Civil War. He wins the nomination and he becomes a more credible general election candidate for skeptical independents and even some left-leaning anti-corporatist Democrat voters who are going to say, like, hey, J.D. Vance is the Donald Trump I voted for, right? I mean, he's the interventionist, anti-militarist, America first skeptic, and I might not agree with his views about, say, Medicaid expansion or whatever, but I definitely, but on this big issue of war and peace, I'm on his team. I mean, I think that's we should linger on that a little bit.
Well, for one, I don't know that J.D. Vance is anti-military intervention any more than Trump was. And if you listen to him and the stuff that he says about wanting Israel to maintain Lebanon and that type of stuff, that's not sure. He runs in this kind of, he seems to be running against Israel. Effectively, you can't kill your way to the solution and those type of things. But
and also maybe the whole world hates you and we're the only country who still looks at you for you.
Yeah.
So maybe you ought to be nicer and more grateful, which is kind of echoes of that meeting.
Don't bite the hand that feeds you, basically. Right. Don't bite the hand that feeds you. But I am not convinced. And I'm not convinced until Trump gets to the point of saying you're cut loose. You no longer get defense in the UN Security Council. You no longer get that military support if indeed you're going to effectively continue to go against U.S. policy. Because I'm not convinced this is not still U.S. policy. When Donald Trump turns to Gilani and say, hey, I'm going to let the terrorists try to take over as opposed to the Israelis because the deal is specific to the Israelis. And if the terrorists, the freakies invade, well, that's a whole different animal. I mean, he's still working at this angle. I don't believe for a moment obviously we have disagreements on this. I believe that the U.S. is playing this salami slice. Hey, because look, the reality is up to this point, the U.S., Iran was not willing to put itself out for Lebanon. It was only last week where they attacked Israel because Israel attacked Beirut. But for the longest time, southern Lebanon had just been given up for grabs. So it seems that the U.S. is still going along with this policy of separate concerns. We're going to give you all of this stuff. So you're going to get financial inducements. But do you let Lebanon go? What does it mean for your credibility when you do? And more to the point, if the U.S. can take Lebanon, they destroyed one of the proxies, or let's say allies of Iran, making Iran that much weaker for when they go for the next push against Iran. I guess my point is, this is not over.
But Iran
would love to be optimistic here.
But Iran knows. Iran is going to hold the line because they have to.
We'll see. I mean, Lebanon is still being invaded. Lebanon is still being occupied. Lebanon is still being attacked. We'll see what they do. I mean, if the strait is closed, then that means that on some level, they are responding to the fact that Lebanon is still being attacked. And up to this point, the strait may be closed. So Lebanon may be, Iran may be holding the line on this. And God bless them. I hope they are. To your point, it's interesting.
It's the the choke point politics are like sort of uncharted territory, right? I mean,
yes.
Iran's ability to defend Hezbollah obviously is greatly challenged by geography. It reminds me of like 1939 when the Nazis invaded Poland and then France declared war against Nazi Germany. But, you know, the Polish-German border is on the other side of Germany, right, from France. So there's not a lot they could do other than try the Germans down on their western border, right?
Yeah.
And so this is different. The choke point thing is, it sort of requires a firmness that is new. But I think, again, I just don't see how the Iranians can, even if they didn't give a shit about Hezbollah, even if Hezbollah started to piss them off, I don't see how they can cut them loose. I mean,
agreed.
It's like it's like, if you don't, your credibility's shot. And, you know, already there wasn't much they could do for Hamas. So they're going to,
they got to hold the line on
this. Where I'm getting pushback here from you and from like some of our listeners, our viewers here, is saying like, oh, like I'm selling JD Vance. Let me be really clear. I hate that werewolf. And he's a fucking phony bastard. And because he's like me, you know, like scholarship kid from Southwest Ohio, and who went to an Ivy, so I kind of like know, you know, I feel like I know him. You know, like when someone's from your neck of the woods and you know their shtick, you hate them more. So
yeah.
So I don't care for him at all. He's a fucking.
By the way, I know guys like Trump. I know businessmen just like Trump. I've worked with businessmen like Trump. They had the same shtick. Looks like him. Sounds like him. It's like look used to like gold on everything. Like it's that I don't know. It's the '80s. I don't know what it is. Like
the '80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the Saddam aesthetic, right? Gold toilets, everything.
Yeah. But I hope you are more right than I am. God knows I hope you're right. I have friends in Iran. I have friends in Lebanon. I don't want those people to get injured or attacked. And if they can come to some kind of terms of a deal in this, obviously I would want them to. I've seen this before, though. I saw this with Mintz. I saw this with Joe Biden. I saw this with Trump when he first got into office. Maybe this is something different. And I hope it is.
The thing is, where things change against Iran and for Israel is if the Israelis or the Americans figure out some way to get Iran's thumb off the choke point of the Strait of Hormuz.
Yes.
I don't think they have found one. I don't think they can find one. But if they figured that out, then all bets are off. But until then, this is where we are.
Can I give you the point about J.D. Vance from the MAGA perspective as the MAGA guy here?
Please.
We don't trust him because he will say whatever he needs to say to whatever audience is that is listening. He's a two-faced cuck and of the highest order politically. I don't think his wife cucks him. But I think that just politically, though, I mean, no, he's your quintessential Republican, and I can prove it. Right now, J.D. Vance, he is trying to pretend like he's anti-war. If he was, he would have went out swinging against Trump when Trump started this stupid war every single day, having press conferences every single day, because Trump cannot fire him. The president cannot fire the vice president.
Oh, Robbie, no VP would do that.
You would every if you're
standing on back their boss.
No, you would if you stand on principle. Because what was it that they ran on? They ran on America first, putting the American people's house back in order. I realize I'm being idealistic here, but I'm telling you
if you transition to become a girl one day, your name's going to be Pollyanna, right? I mean,
so what? Listen, he's not going to get elected anyway.
I know, but what VP would do that? I know of no VP that would do that.
A top-level politician would do that.
One with balls would do it, JT. Someone who actually believes what they say. It is their job.
There are no balls among those. You don't get to that level if you have balls or integrity. No. That's why I'm sitting on a podcast instead of like sitting in the cabinet, okay?
Listen, a smart VP who would do that would win Democrats, Independents, and Republicans, and you would do it by winning principles. So if J.D. Vance wanted to really win the presidency and put Narco Rubio in his place and make Trump look like the bitch that he is, he would have just done the Robbie model. You would go out, you would do this, you'd go with the flamethrower. That's why Trump won in 2016. He promised to burn everything down. Promised to do a hard reset. The reason why Trump has failed is because he is just more of the same. J.D. Vance ran as the MAGA vice president. He's proven himself to be a two-faced coward who at the very best gets on his knees before Peter Thiel every morning and asks him for a slap in the face. I mean, who the hell knows what's going on there? It's weird. But what I can tell you, though, is that
he's just a Republican, like you said. I mean,
I know. And that's why that is why he will lose. I would rather have as a right winger, I would rather have a Democrat who hates me than a Republican who pretends like he's my friend. J.D. Vance has fried. J.D. Vance cannot win the next election. He can't do it.
Donald Trump was a quantum singularity.
But it doesn't have to be.
There aren't. Yeah. Well, the point is that's by definition, extremely unusual. So, and you know, I mean, Trump's a little psychotic, and the fact is. That's that served him well, because when you don't give a shit, then you can break all the rules, right?
That's the point. Listen, if you're going to be a political revolutionary, you're not doing it to make a career. You're going there to break China and set fires. That is your job. That is your objective. When Trump started this war, he could have went on TV and said, listen, my boss, the president of the United States, is in direct violation of the Constitution of the United States. He has started a war on behalf of a foreign nation in violation of the Constitution. I demand that Congress vote on this right now. If he would have done that, he would win, and he would be like the second George Washington. To your point, he's not that guy.
No,
and that's why he will never be the next Republican candidate for president. Mm.
I don't know about that.
Marco Rubio is going to be who they're going to run. Mark my words. Especially if little Marco is able to bring Cuba in as the 51st state. Oh, yeah. They want him higher.
Democrats will be very, very pleased to run against Rubio. Even Kamala would have beaten him.
I think Vance is the guy. I think Vance is a better – I think he's Trump with a better communicative capability. Mm-hmm. Meaning – if Trump had the ability to actually communicate, it would be J.D. Vance. And as you say, J.D. Vance could take on whatever mold he's trying to take on. He's trying to run against Israel or something like that. Basically, he's trying to run as like a Catholic against the Israelis in the way that they operate. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. But he's obviously taking a political tack, and he's trying to coat himself into that thing as, I was the guy that was against this war. That's who I was. I'm J.D. Vance. And he's going to use that.
But he didn't come out against the war, JT. That's the whole thing.
But you
the reporting is going to be that behind the scenes, Vance was against the war, but he was stood by his boss. That's behind the way they're going to run it.
Listen, you can't criticize Kamala Harris, who's talking about how Biden was sharp as a tack, and then come out and then say, "Oh, by the way, that was all BS." That's the argument that you're making right now. You can be against something privately, but it's your public profession is what matters. That's why baptism is so important.
Me, I'm making the argument that the media is going to push. Yeah, Vance was the guy that was against the war, but he stood by his boss.
Yeah,
he's an honorable man because he stood by his boss, but he had such hard, difficult feelings about the war. That's what they're going to pump out.
But if your boss is a dishonorable douchebag, then the honorable thing to do would be to oppose him, not get in bed with him.
Not the way political works. Thought. That's not the way it works in political thought.
In America.
Yeah.
Then the Republic is done.
I mean, in America, the vice president is expected to be the president's attack dog and lapdog, right?
Yes.
No matter what.
But if you're running on breaking the mold, that's the way. That's where you're able to start doing it at. Tulsi Gabbard.
The mold is the mold because it doesn't get broken very often.
Tulsi Gabbard flamed out. Kent Clark. I mean, he. God bless him. He's the closest thing to a principled person that we had. Then one of them they were able to stay because they serve at the pleasure of the president.
Right.
That's the problem. J.D. Vance will not be elected because everyone sees him for what he is, which is a political chameleon and a coward.
Yeah. By the way, I don't give a shit if J.D. Vance is elected or not. I'm just saying that I think he is. First of all, generically, the sitting vice president is always the most likely heir to a sitting president. Right.
Exactly.
And in this case, Vance hasn't done anything to fuck it up. So, Kamala Harris went in weak with 0.6% of the Democratic vote. She was never brought into the fold. Biden never allowed her to shine. Their staffs hated each other. And she obviously had some inherent weaknesses anyway. But she would have been, and even so, despite all that, right, they still gave it to her in the clutch, even though they didn't want to. I guess that's my whole point. It's hard to bypass a sitting vice president. That doesn't happen much anymore. Like the days of even ditching your sitting vice president when you run for reelection, sorry, Henry Wallace, we're going to go for Truman. Those days are gone. You don't do that anymore. All right, let's do some questions here. Daniel BTS, good morning, gents. What are your thoughts on what's going on in Ukraine? I saw Crimea announce that they've suspended fuel sales to the public and canceled all tourist activities for the summer. Yeah.
So Ukraine had been going on an energy war. Now, they had started this like a year ago, but they were doing these kind of pinprick strikes. Apparently, they weren't necessarily doing the job, even though from the propaganda standpoint, they were doing the job. Basically, you see a huge fire. Or the bombing of St. Petersburg when Putin is going for the SPIEF conference, those type of things. They've started to go after Crimea specifically. There's always apparently a fuel shortage in Crimea during the summers, but Ukraine has been extensively going after fuel trucks and everything else to try to damage the ability for the Crimea's for Crimea to get fuel. Russia's response to that has been to go after fuel in Ukraine, basically going after every fuel truck and everything else. Every fuel truck is strong, but every, let's say, commercial vehicles and those type of things, basically repeating the energy war against Ukraine also. It's just something else Russia's going to have to deal with. I mean, the reality of it is there is a lot of consternation in Russia about the citizenry, about Putin not being aggressive enough. Basically, that the military wants to go, and he is for some reason restraining the military from going and doing its job. And he is still doing it today. It is unclear why Putin is doing this.
It's been four and a half years.
Yeah, it's been 4.5 years. It's like, dude, you have been running a special military operation for 4.5 years. At what point does it become something else?
Yeah. I think Russian patience really wore out a year ago, I think.
Yes.
Cosmo Retro Gaming, happy Father's Day weekend to all you awesome fathers.
Oh, I don't have any kids.
I'm a father, but I don't know if I'm awesome, but thank you. But Landis 48. Ted, how do you feel about the Fahrenheit versus centigrade debate between Americans and Euros, which is better for everyday use for daily temperatures? I don't know. We could go with Kelvin. It doesn't really matter. I mean, the only thing that I guess, you know, because Fahrenheit is more precise, right? Because it's just like bigger numbers for the same exact scale. It's kind of like tells you more, right? Like the difference between 19 and 20 degrees centigrade is kind of a big difference. You can really feel it. You know, you get subtlety between 67 and 68 degrees, which is the same thing. So they're both fine. I don't care either way. I mean, I do think the United States probably just should join the world and do the metric system, including centigrade, just because weights and standards should be standardized.
Having the feelings about it. It's the same difference to me.
Yeah. Okay.
I agree with everything you said, though.
The Jerk Store, for us consistent listeners, what's better for you, Rumble or YouTube? Rumble?
That's a fight.
So, all right. So here, put on Robbie. So Robbie, you can explain this better than I can.
So it comes down to what your measurement is. If all you're doing is watching, but if you're not taking advantage of the different tiers of membership, Rumble pays better because it pays based off of watch hours as opposed to just ads. So the way that the ads work on YouTube, you click on YouTube, click on the stream, the ad starts. If you skip the ad, then the creator doesn't get anything, or they just get a portion of what the ad revenue is. Whereas on Rumble, you actually get paid based off of how long it is that you watch. It's something more like terrestrial radio. The flip side of that is that Rumble, if you want to become a paid channel subscriber, only offers a $5 a month subscription. Whereas over on YouTube, like you have various tiers of membership that you're able to buy into. So it just depends on what it is that you're doing. If you are wanting to contribute the maximum amount out of your pocket for membership, then YouTube is going to pay better. But if what you're doing is watching the show, then at that point, Rumble pays better because the metric is different.
Okay. Thank you very much for that, Robbie. Annie Anna, did y'all see Vance get ignored by the Qatari prime minister?
Yes. Well, it wasn't. I thought it was the delegation because the U.S. wanted to get a photo, and Iran was like, "I'm not taking a photo with you." I mean, we don't seem to quite get it. We murdered Soleimani. We murdered the Ayatollah. We murdered his delegation. At what point do you start a war and believe that these people are going to be willing to have some kind of photo op with you? They are clueless in regards to the level of damage and havoc that they cause around the globe and the response to that. I used to tell my ex-girlfriend, I was like, dude, you don't get what it's like to deal with you. That makes sense.
It's like there's a band whose name is "And You Shall Know Us by Our Trail of Dead."
Yeah, you should know us by our trail of dead, yeah.
Mark 1661, Ted's tweet featured by the Due Dissonance Boys last night. I don't know.
Very cool.
I don't know who that is.
One that went viral.
My ex feed's been doing really well lately. I just go on every morning and afternoon and shoot back at the Zionists. That's all. And then it works. I guess people are still afraid of them. Why? Nobody likes them anymore. It's like, nothing to be afraid of. It's safe. Come on in. Let's kick their ass. Frozen Flames. I kind of wonder what part Hezbollah has played in compelling Israeli ceasefire violations. Not saying anyone is innocent here. I'm curious about the practical matters on the ground.
They can always go the fuck home. Like you've invaded somebody else's country. They have a right to respond to the fact that you've invaded their country and has been on an ethnic cleansing campaign.
So you being there is a provocation.
Yeah, like, your very existence.
You can sit there and just be like roasting marshmallows over a campfire. They have the right to shoot at you, right?
If I break into my neighbor's house, my neighbor has a right to feel some kind of way about the fact that I'm in his house with my feet on his counter.
In most states, your neighbor can kill you. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Staying your ground. I guess I'm trying to point out that Israel, nobody told Israel to invade. They chose to invade. Nobody told Israel to go on an ethnic cleansing campaign. They chose to go on an ethnic cleansing campaign. No one told them to kidnap people and rape and murder and pillage, et cetera. They chose.
Yeah, and so, they don't get that at all. They think that's an argument. You know, like, oh, like four Israeli soldiers were killed by Hezbollah. You know,
good.
Where did that happen? Where did that happen? In Ohio? Did that happen in Tel Aviv? Oh, no, it did not, right? And then it's like, where were they? And just in this morning, there was like some top Zionist like saying like, you know, oh, she was posting pictures of the terror tunnels. I like the alliteration. It's like a tunnel is just a hole, okay, in the ground. It doesn't do terror, okay? Anyway, so, but they were like, you know, how could you live with this UAV launching facility 4 miles away from your kid's bedroom? And my answer to that is I wouldn't put my kid's bedroom on occupied land in a war zone.
Yes.
Unless I was born into it and I couldn't afford to leave, but I could afford to leave. So like you did that. It's sort of the way the mentality of the Americans, we invaded Iraq. Then local militias backed by Iran blew up our guys with IEDs. Right. And then we say, Iran killed American troops. Well, yeah, but not like while they were at Fort Bragg, right? I mean, it's like while they were someplace they weren't supposed to be, being blown up by, you know, the locals, by the people that the locals invited in, right? That's not, I mean, there's context here. It's like, we put settlements in the West Bank. We have to defend them. No, they shouldn't be there, you know, at all.
Yeah. Don't get mad when somebody blows up the settlement that shouldn't be there, right? Don't get mad if somebody kills the soldier.
They're rectifying a situation that shouldn't exist in the first place. Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. It's just bizarre. Like, the argument is so bizarre. It's like, well, we've invaded, but they have no right to hit us with drones. Like, the guy that was in the UN complaining, well, they're using drones to attack our brave Israelis as they murder babies and women. It's like, okay.
Right. I mean, look, I mean, even October 7th, you know, look, as a leftist, I disapprove of targeting civilians. And there were some civilians targeted, right? Not all. There were a lot of Israeli military troops who were attacked, too. But October 7th, like, oh, come on. You cage these people for 16 years under miserable conditions, which I saw because I've been to Gaza under the occupation. And it's like, You subjected them to brutal occupation, and like, and then they're like, well, it's not occupation. It is. If you control someone's borders and you blockade what goes in and out, that is occupation. And like, and then you, and then they manage to bust out, and they kill people who were 3 kilometers away from the border fence. I mean, it can be shocking, but it's not surprising, and you can't be surprised. And that's on you, really. I mean, you know, you have to expect that's going to happen. If I keep kicking Clovis, he's going to start biting and scratching me, you know?
Was it wrong for John Brown to kill the whites when he broke out in the slave revolt?
Fuck no.
Then why is it wrong for them to do this?
John Brown is a national hero. There should be statues of him in every city.
Right. And will there be statues of the people on October 7th in 100 years when people look back on it and say, well, this was obviously an occupation and look at what Israel did?
I think there will be, actually. Yeah, awesome. I do. The victor makes history. Annie Anna, Vance is standing next to the Pakistani prime minister. The Qatari prime minister comes over, greets and hugs the Pakistani. Vance is ready to greet him, and the Qatari ignores him, then walks away.
I'm not taking a picture.
Why do we assume America is colluding with Israel? I don't even understand that question, but are you kidding? Colluding? It goes beyond that.
Yeah, it's not just colluding. I mean, we're giving them millions, billions of dollars.
we're each other's ass boys, right? Is what's going on. PW Walker, thanks for the dollar donation. Trump is trapped. If he cuts off Israel, it guarantees impeachment. I'm not sure it guarantees impeachment, but it definitely causes trouble, you know, for sure. I mean, but he is, that's my point. Trump is trapped. So he's when you're between these two unpalatable choices, which way do you go? I'm just guessing from what we know about Trump, he's going to choose his path of least resistance is going to be to cut the Israelis loose because the Israelis offer more threats than they do benefits. I mean, what are the Israelis going to do for him now? What's AIPAC going to do for him? Like,
yeah, but that was the question even before the war, right? Like, if that was true, then what was the point of the war? Mm-hmm. Like, because in that case, Trump was always elected. This was always supposedly his last term. What influence would AIPAC have on him, or for that matter, Miriam Adelson have on him at this point, if indeed this is his last term? Like, meaning, I don't see the political pull on him.
Right.
I guess I'm pointing out, though, that if that's true, then the war would have never taken place because the political pull would have never been there in the first place. So there's obviously some pull and tie.
Well, I'm currently reading. I can't tell you too much about it because it's embargoed until tomorrow, I guess. Regime Change, the Maggie Haberman book. But yeah. Not tomorrow. I'm reading it in preparation for a column. And in there, I don't think it's revealing too much to say that basically the Israelis lied to Trump about this, you know, the situation in Israel. I mean, in Iran, right. And that's it. Kind of boils down to that. Also, Trump was really seduced, according to this book, so apparently he doesn't look at social media anymore. All of his news comes from watching Fox News. And when Israel started attacking Iran without, you know, the U.S. initially, right, the 12-day war, the reporting on Fox, which I was watching, was breathless about how incredibly successful it was, really triumphalist. And Trump had a serious case of FOMO. He was like, oh my God, the Israelis are kicking ass. And I'm getting no credit, and no one's talking about me. So he wanted to be on board of victory, what he perceived as the victory parade, not understanding that what he was seeing was a wildly skewed view of this conflict that really, you know, did not reflect reality. I mean, sure, the Israelis were blowing things up in Iran, yes, sure, but there was a bigger picture. You know, basically, air dominance cannot defeat Iran. So that's a big part of it. He was fooled. He was fooled by Fox News. He was fooled by his Israeli contacts. And I think he knows, you know, don't bullshit a bullshitter. He got grifted. He hates that. He's like, I'm the grifter, not the griftee. And, you know, you ever see the Ali G segment with him? Where basically he's like one of the few guys who, as soon as he sits down with Sacha Baron Cohen, he immediately realizes that it's a grift and it's a lie, and he like sees through it, right? I think that's what happened. I mean, that's why I think it's different now. It's like he's not in the same place mentally as he was when he first agreed with Bibi to go in hand in hand. That's why I think things are different.
I think it's different. I suppose we will see.
Okay, here we go. P.W. Walker, thanks for the dollar. Ted said, Ted, they said they were very happy that Hillary would run against Trump. Famous last words. Fair point. It's like, you never know. All I could say is, I mean, J.D. Vance, neither party really has a good candidate for 2028, right? I mean, it's like, if I'm the Democrats, I'm not terribly excited about fucking, you know, Andy Beshear or Gretchen Whitmer or Gavin Newsom. And if I'm a Republican, you know, there's J.D. Vance, the werewolf with his, you know, a face for radio. And you've got like little Marco Rubio, who's like a used car salesman and also just like a weasel. I mean, he's not manly, you know, he doesn't have that swagger, that masculinity that Americans look for from a male presidential candidate. You know, I mean, if I found out he was closeted gay, I'd be like, oh, okay, I believe that. You know what I mean? He's like, I think Pete Buttigieg is more manly than Mark Rubio, for real.
What?
I do. I mean, you put them side by side, Buttigieg is more butch. I mean, you know, I don't know. I think there's no, I think like, you know, like a Trump-like shooting star candidate has not presented themselves for 2028.
Yeah, there's no dark horse that I've seen.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I suspect Democrats are going to go with Newsom, who is effectively white Obama.
Yeah.
But he is a classical politician, though. Obama had at least the benefit of being black, weirdly enough, where it's edgy. It's something different. I remember I had a guy, he was like, I voted for Obama because he was black. I thought he was going to turn the apple cart up. And I was like,
well, I mean, until Obama, mainstream national black politics was always different, highly differentiated. I mean, who has any doubt that a President Al Sharpton or a President Jesse Jackson would have been a real game changer?
Well, I mean, I don't know about Sharpton. Jackson would have probably.
But it used to be like, you know, like black politician meant progressive, you know,
But it depends on what you mean by progressive.
Obama, I mean, like that.
Progressive in the context of woke stuff, but not. Maybe that could have been said for Jesse Jackson.
Also economics.
But from the standpoint of like an Obama, like that was, I guess my thing is, would they have always ended up like Obama, especially if they were part of the Democratic establishment?
I mean, Al Sharpton with the, of course we have, now we have the benefit of hindsight and basically, you know, he took the, you know,
MSNBC.
He took the buyout, right, from MSNBC.
That's what I said. I don't know about Sharpton.
We'll pay you money. Well, I mean, he's on MSNBC, right?
So yeah, but Jackson seemed to be a true believer, maybe. But yeah. I guess my hope is with this stuff of all petered out to what we see with Obama. I think Obama was somewhat different in this, so I agree with you. But it wasn't like, but the moment that you had a black person who was doing this, black people all of a sudden were okay with whatever came up. Came out of Democratic politics.
What do you think about, I mean, so, you know, the politicians we're talking about, the traditional black politicians, like, you know, the James Clyburn and all those people, those are descendants of slaves, right? And then Obama was biracial and not a descendant of slaves. Did his ethnic identification make it easier for white America to embrace the first black president, did Obama feel less attached to quote unquote traditional liberal progressive democratic politics because of his, you know, his, he wasn't tied in with that, even though when he got, you know, he started dating Michelle and she brought him into that Chicago, you know, daily political machine and also the black churches and all that. But it was kind of a choice, like this is going to be the lane that you're going to have to go if you want to be ambitious in Illinois politics and maybe go national. Nobody ever talks about it. It's so uncomfortable, right, for whites to talk about that. Like, are we allowed to talk about that? You know, I always used to say, well, he was first black president, but kind of like a little bit with an asterisk, right? Like by the way, not a descendant of slaves.
I mean, I've had conversations with a guy. I remember African American at some people's summit or something like that. And he plainly was like, blacks weren't ready for a black president. That was his take on Obama. Black people weren't ready for a black president. Because what it put people in a position for is to defend Obama because he was being attacked in such vicious ways, like making pictures of Michelle Obama as an ape. Okay, this is radically racist. And it's understood to be so. And it was done purely for that attack. Which means that instead of dealing with, let's say, some of the vagaries of Obama, you're put in the position of defending the first black president, not necessarily a person who just so happened to be a politician. It's awkward. But, I mean, I think the thing that Trump has taught us more than anything else is a president could be damn near anything. People in the political space would just get accustomed to whoever the president is. Mm-hmm. And the same thing, I suspect, would have been true for Obama also. After a while, it would have just been, well, that's just Obama.
That's the president.
To be black, if it makes sense.
Well, that's how I feel about, you know, Buttigieg or Bernie, any of these, like, new identifiers, new to the Oval Office, white, you know, identifiers. I mean, is America ready for a Jewish president? I mean, it will be. And I mean, it's, yeah, it is. But if the right person runs, yeah. You know, first gay president, I mean, that might be Marco Rubio, but.
I don't get the sense. If Bernie Sanders was gay, I would have voted for Bernie Sanders. I don't care if the person's gay.
Yeah, I don't care.
Would America vote for him? I don't know. I don't think so. Buttigieg was getting like -2 from the black vote.
Yeah. Do you think they held the gay thing against him?
Yeah. If I'm being honest, yeah.
I mean,
I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying I think it's true.
But would those numbers budge if Buttigieg, you know, runs an effective campaign?
Maybe. I mean, but he's going to have to sell it. Because the issue,
if single digits with the black vote, you can't win the Democratic nomination.
It's not possible. That's my point.
You can do it.
Yeah, that's my
point. You need at least 70% of the black vote.
Yeah, he needs strong contingent. I mean, even Sanders, right?
Mm-hmm. That's where that's where Sanders fucked up.
South Carolina. So, yeah. You need the black vote to win the Democratic primary.
Yeah, gotta. Okay. Oh, my God.
By the way, it doesn't thrill me to say that. Yeah. I don't like Buttigieg, just to be very clear. Yeah. I wouldn't vote for him for a host of reasons. It has nothing to do with his homosexuality. It doesn't thrill me to say that.
Yes. Yeah, by the way, I hate the fact that, like, on this show and everywhere else, if I say something quote-unquote positive about someone, it's assumed that I'm trying to sell them. Like,
yeah, and it's not. Right. No. Right. That's our society, though, right? Like, by virtue of saying something positive, you're selling it, because otherwise you wouldn't say it. Yeah, no, that's not.
Right.
No.
Like, if I say, oh, Pete Buttigieg is very articulate, and he is. Does that mean I'm going to vote for him? Fuck no. I mean, you know, I think, is Marco Rubio fairly bright? Yeah, I think he is. I'm not going to vote for him. You know, Ted Cruz, we were told that he was bright. That turned out not to be true. That was right. They let Eddie into Harvard.
Disgusting salamander.
He's such a monster. Manchild, thanks for the dollar. Has anyone ever performed a bris on Israel? Perhaps now is the time to take a little off the top. BW Walker, thanks for the dollar. AIPAC will have no trouble sacrificing Trump. No way Congress lets Trump cut Israel loose.
It's that part. I don't think Congress is going to do it either.
Well, they have a treaty obligation right under the Camp David Accord, so it would be hard to imagine how we get rid of that $3.8 billion a year that we send to Israel with the current configuration of Congress. But can you cut off – can you make this relationship more dutiful than enthusiastic? Yeah, you can. You can definitely be like, okay, instead of being like, hey, baby, what's up? It can be like, yeah, what do you want? I think that's where we're going.
We'll see. We'll see. I am not convinced. I've seen, like, this is the boy who cried wolf stuff, right? Where finally when the wolf is eating the boy, the people don't come. That's where I'm at. I'm at the, yeah, I've heard this before. I'm going to the store.
No,
you want anything from the weed shop?
No, you're on safer territory with your position for sure.
See, I mean, part of me thinks that this is different. Like, I think all of this is different because under normal circumstances, we wouldn't have attacked Iran, or Iran wouldn't have attacked Israel, and Syria wouldn't have fallen. All of this is new territory. So you could be right.
Things are changing. The question is, you know, how much does it mean, right? And Schizo, yeah. Thanks so much for becoming a monthly supporter of Deep Program here on Rumble and on YouTube, but on Rumble. Thank you so much. Okay, we have one other major thing that we got to talk about. Keir Starmer. Starmer is gone, daddy, gone. You know, what do you make of that? I mean, I'm not English, but my understanding is that he never articulated any kind of reason that he wanted to be prime minister or what he wanted to do with his stewardship of England, other than just like he liked the job. You know, it's like he didn't have, I mean, the English are very, like, post-Brexit, they're anxious and annoyed. They kind of feel a little rudderless and adrift. And he just didn't provide leadership. And it's not even about any one specific thing. I mean, he strikes me as sort of like the same politics as Tony Blair, but maybe a little more charmless.
Yeah. He has the charisma of a used tampon. He's not that. I mean, he, like, I don't even know how he got the job. This was the same guy that put a knife in Jeremy Corbyn. During the election campaign that Jeremy Corbyn was effectively running, Keir Starmer was doing everything in his power to effectively damage the political campaign of Corbyn, including around the issue of Brexit. So from that point on, Starmer was always on my shit list as a slimy, smarmy, Ted Cruz-like politician. I agree with you, like Tony Blair without the charisma. This is new labor. Mm-hmm. His approval rating was like in a 13% level. Obviously, there was all sorts of political issues in Britain dealing with unemployment, obviously the riots that were taking place. Like, this is not indicative of a successful political space. And when you think about it, we're getting into Nigel Farage's party also coming into fruition and taking a huge swath of Tory, but also you're looking at many Labour also losing to those new political parties, political entities. And the reason is obvious. When a center fails to deliver, the wings get their play. Mm-hmm. We don't have a political system. I would say one thing about it, just real quick. The ability for a new political entity in Europe is possible from the standpoint of, let's say, UK politics or other European nations in a way that it's not true here. They were able to develop, meaning Nigel Farage, new political party, and that new political party was able to take huge gains in regards to Tory districts. Can anybody say that to be true here? If we had a new party, the Thomas Party, that party's going nowhere, right? Like, it's very difficult to do that here in a way that is not necessarily true in the UK. And yeah, you're seeing the diminishment of Labour. I forget the guy, Andy something, that just won their seat. They're thinking about putting him into that slot.
Yeah, Andy Burnham.
That's his name, Burnham. Okay, I wasn't sure. Andy Burnham. Andy Burnham is untested, but apparently he did well. And so they want to put him in the slot of prime minister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens there. Any thoughts about the heat wave sweeping across Western Europe? I mean, the big Atlantic, transatlantic current is breaking down. That's sort of the day after tomorrow scenario from that movie, where first it leads to heat, extreme heat in Northern Europe, and then that causes more melting of the ice caps, which paradoxically causes the waters of the Northern Atlantic to get colder due to all the snow melt, which the melting ice becomes very cold seawater. That causes more breakdown and eventually, maybe not so eventually, maybe within this century, causes another ice age in Europe. There's actually some scenarios that predict that Europe might have to be completely evacuated by 2100. I don't know. I mean, this is the second year in a row where, I mean, there's been a lot of extreme heat in Europe. You know, 104 degrees, that's not normal for Paris. It's just not.
I don't know. I mean, this is kind of an is-what-it-is thing. Like, if it's breaking down, then it's breaking down. And obviously, the world is complicated in regards to the way the systems are put together and everything else, and that we as human beings can do things that can adversely affect systems on the planet in a way that we just may not be aware of because we may not even notice. It's like the human body, right? There's so many complex systems that are going on. Any little thing can disrupt something else. I don't know. I mean, this is what it is. What are they going to do about it? Right.
Yep. Right.
It's just gotta
get ready to pack up and go. For all the Americans like me who view Europe as like their stopgap when this country goes tits up, maybe not so much. Anyway, everyone, thanks for joining us. We will be back in a couple of hours at 12 noon. We'll be taking your phone calls as well as your text questions and comments in the Q&A show, 12 noon Eastern time. a Monday and Wednesday, today being Monday. We'll be back tomorrow for the regular show at 9 a.m. TMI show coming up right now with Manila. JT, see you in a couple hours.
Have a good one. Tell Manila. Hi.
Thank you. All right. Bye.